This lecture is for Unit 1, Basic Computing Concepts, including History. It's the first unit in Component 4, Introduction to Information and Computer Science. This is the fifth and final lecture for this unit. Up until the 1970s, computers were large, expensive, and were used by the government, large corporations, and universities. Over time, improved technology reduced the size and cost of microprocessors, which led to computers for personal use. The first available personal computer was the Altair 8800. It was available in 1975 as a kit or fully assembled. It was programmed with switches and output was given with flashing lights. Hobbyists, many of whom had worked with large computers at their jobs, flocked to these kits. Bill Gates and Paul Allen were some of these original hobbyists who developed a compiler for the Altair. They launched Microsoft to sell this compiler. At the same time, Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak started Apple Computer Company in 1976. The Apple I was their first offering, and it was a kit. The user had to provide a keyboard, power supply, and monitor. On this slide, there's a picture of the Apple I computer that shows how rudimentary it was. The Apple I sold for $666.66, which they thought was an interesting number. It included an etched printed circuit board, a bag of parts, and a 16-page assembly manual. The user had to provide his or her own keyboard, power supply, and monitor, which was usually a modified television set. When a Mountain View computer store called the Byte Shop ordered 50 units, Wozniak and Jobs attracted the funding to start Apple Computer. Apple I was not the first PC, but was certainly one of the most popular. It was followed by the Apple II in 1977, which came out with a keyboard, monitor, and floppy drive. The photo shows that it looks much more like the personal computers we know today. At the time that the Apple computers were becoming popular, IBM was watching very carefully, and it decided it wanted to get into this market as well. IBM knew that in order to be competitive, they had to be quick. They didn't have time to develop their own hardware and software, so instead they used parts that were already available. The first IBM PC was based on the Intel 8088 chip. It used off-the-shelf parts and software, including compilers and operating systems from Microsoft. This in turn launched the success of Microsoft. Because its architecture wasn't proprietary, it lent to the development of what were called clones at the time. Anyone could put together a PC using the same parts and design that IBM did. These were called clones. IBM PCs and clones were used for business and personal use and contributed to the personal computer becoming so popular. Software was an integral part of the popularity of PCs. The most important piece of software on a computer is its operating system, or OS. The OS coordinates the hardware and all the other software on a system. DOS was developed for Apple by Steve Wozniak for coordinating the use of the Motorola chip in the Apple products. IBM needed an OS for their PC based on the Intel chip. It approached Microsoft, who didn't have an OS at the time. They did have compilers available for it, but not an OS. Bill Gates recommended talking with Digital Research, who did have one, but Digital Research didn't return IBM's call. In the meantime, Microsoft acquired QDOS from Seattle Computer Products, which Microsoft distributed to IBM along with their compilers, and it called it MS-DOS. The smart, quick maneuvering by Bill Gates and Paul Allen helped launch the success of Microsoft with the initial IBM PC. The first popular software program was VisCalc. It was developed by Harvard Business School students Dan Bricklin and Bob Frankston in 1978, and it was a spreadsheet program for the PC. Many businesses were very interested in spreadsheets for their many calculations. 100,000-plus copies were sold of it the first year. Also, other spreadsheet programs soon followed. Lotus 123 in 1982, and Excel in 1985. Word processing, which had been done on separate dedicated machines, made a huge impact on the PC world. WordStar was the first in 1979, followed by Word for MS-DOS and WordPerfect. Word processing is now one of the biggest applications for PCs. In the meantime, the first steps in developing the Internet were happening. In 1969, what was called ARPANET at the time connected four universities. It was a project sponsored by the U.S. government for connecting researchers. By 1971, there were 15 sites on the network, and by the 1980s, there were over 1,000 sites on the network. That's when the term Internet actually started being used, instead of ARPANET, to refer to the network. Other networks were formed at the same time and eventually all merged together to become what we know today as the Internet. In 1989, Tim Berners-Lee developed the World Wide Web software, which is an interface on the Internet. In 1992, Congress voted to allow commercial activity on the Internet. Up until this point, only government-sponsored institutions and universities could use the Internet. In 1993, the first web browsers were released, and in 1997, PubMed, which offered free online access to Medline, was launched. The combination of several different factors led to the Internet boom of the late 90s. Personal computers became faster, cheaper, and smaller as technology advanced. This meant that more households and more people could afford to purchase them. Microsoft advanced their operating system and introduced Windows, which had a graphical interface. Now users could interact with a computer using a mouse, which made navigating a PC much easier for most users. The Internet was open to commercial use, and web browsers made exploring the websites easy. And this all led to this huge Internet boom. But it also led to the ubiquitousness of computers in our society today. As all these advances in computing and the Internet were happening, electronic medical records, or EMRs, got their foothold. More versions of them were being developed in the 1990s, and they became more user-friendly with the addition of graphical user interfaces. HIPAA, which is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, included provisions for establishing standards for electronic medical records in 1996. In 2000, only 16% of private physicians and less than 10% of hospitals used EMRs. By 2005, 25% of private physicians used EMRs, and the number has since been increasing. Computing has continued to advance since then. Some of the highlights are listed here. Personal data assistants introduced handheld computing, and cell phones have replaced PDAs. All of us now are very familiar with iPhones and BlackBerries, which are small computers that we carry around with us every day and do most things that we can do on a laptop or desktop, but with a limited screen and limited memory. Wireless networks are now widely available, so mobile computing is pervasive. We now expect to be able to connect to the Internet everywhere and all the time. Social networking is another phenomenon that has developed through the use of the Internet and computers, which now connect people frequently all over the globe. Computers and the Internet are ubiquitous. In 2009, the Hi-Tech Act was passed as part of the Economic Stimulus Recovery Plan. It provides incentives for EMR use starting in 2011. Because of this act, there will be much more use of electronic medical records and health records in clinical settings in our society. So where is this all heading? What's the future of computing? If you knew that, you will become a very wealthy person. We don't know exactly where things are going, but we do know some things. We know that computer technology is going to continue to become faster, more powerful, smaller, and presumably cheaper. We know that mobile computing is here to stay. The concept of cloud computing, which is all the data on the Internet, is going to be a hot topic for a while. Are computers going to become more ubiquitous, even more than they are? How are they going to do that? Are there going to be more and better computers? What's in store for healthcare technology? It's difficult to say for sure, but we do know that it will be interesting. We'll all have to stay tuned.